dejar llorar de pena, los voy a condenar, porque por culpa de ellos no te podré olvidar. Cuando te estoy mirando, de amor sufro por ti. Ingratos ojos míos, ¿por qué serán así?
Pittsburgh, this is Eric Harrison coming to you with a heart full of gratitude on WRCT Pittsburgh. Rock on, Yinzers.
WRCT Pittsburgh, the last bastion of pulchritude.
Thank you. DJ Heim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRC.
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
Welcome, everybody. Hope you had a good weekend. One of the nice things we got going into the weekend was another very strong jobs report. And when you see job creation exceed expectations, and when you see a sustained low unemployment rate, if you're rooting for the country, if you're rooting for workers, if you're rooting for small businesses and the people, you would be happy about such news. You would say, oh, I'm on the side of my country and the people who work here. And therefore, when job creation is strong, when unemployment is low, it's something to be happy about. I know this would be sort of like a weird introduction to a story if there were not a group of people actively rooting for the country's demise, or when they can no longer do that because it's so obvious the economy looks pretty good, they start taking credit for it despite the fact that they are not in power. And this is much of what we see from the modern Republican Party, and particularly from the MAGA right, which is desperate to either destroy Biden's economy, pretend it's no good, or say it's only good because of the expectation that Donald Trump is ultimately going to become president. And that's why people are hiring. Can you imagine what I mean? Listen, I'm a business owner. What on earth would lead me to hire someone today? Because I think that 7 months from now, Trump might be inaugurated. Even if I believed that Trump being inaugurated would do something to the economy that would then help my business in some way, and I would need more people, why would I be hiring people now because of that? It just doesn't make any sense. And so here's a few examples. Here is Fox News and others. They either laugh about the reports, or they seem almost like they're announcing the death of someone. Let's look at a couple of examples of this.
Maria, this is something. 272,000.
Nancy Lazar was right. She was right.
She was right.
272,000. Everybody, the estimate was 185,000. And by the way, that blows even the top of the range from economists going in. The range was 120 to 258, and we came in at 272.
And as you can see there, Maria Bartiromo sort of amused, like, maybe I believe these numbers, but certainly not something she's particularly thrilled with. Here's another one from Fox News. They sound almost like funeral announcements.
All this considering the much larger than expected May jobs report we got this morning. You know, all the Ivy League trained economists out there predicted a gain of 185,000 non-farm payrolls during the month. Instead, the economy added 272,000.
Not any mention of the fact that this is continued year over year strong economy, the likes of which presidents usually get rewarded with re-election when they oversee. Now, for comparison, here's like a more normal reaction for CNBC from CNBC to good numbers for workers in your country.
Right. We should all be happy that we've got a strong economy. You know, I know you were just mentioning there's two schools of thought. Is it the strong economy school, or we have to have lower interest rates for the market to go higher? I'll always take a strong economy.
Right.
You know, at the end of the day, it's all about the economy. It's all about GDP growth, GDP, corporate earnings, the health of the consumer. That's going to win out all of the time in the long run. So the health of the economy is more important. If you look at where the jobs are being created, we're in the same big categories. Where the government came back to be a big hire again.
Healthcare,
and our favorite, travel and leisure. You know, businesses are renormalizing. We see it all the time. People are traveling for business. It's no longer just personal travel.
It's what it is. And even Newsmax had to admit, damn, this actually does seem pretty good.
Well, it's important to take a big picture view here, and if you zoom out to what the economy looked like just prior to the pandemic, you'll see that about 81% of Americans aged 25 to 54, that is prime age Americans, were working. basically no change today. Today, also around 81% of prime age workers working. And so this 1 month looks very strong. It looks like the economy is doing really, really well.
Now, they still put up something on the screen called the Biden Misery Index, and they're still bigger picture going to try to talk about how the economy is no good. But even on Newsmax, they have to acknowledge, damn, I mean, this month at least looks pretty good. One of the greatest ruses that the American right wing has successfully pulled on the American people is that they've spent 30 years, 40 years even, telling us they are the party of the job growth and the business environment that's favorable and economic expansion. And the truth is, they are the party of subpar growth. Look at any metric. Democratic presidents, on average, have seen 164,000 new jobs per month. On the other hand, Republicans, 61,000. 164,000 jobs a month versus 61,000 when Democrats versus Republicans are presidents. Say, oh, well, it has to do with all these other things. Well, still, for all of their claims that Democratic presidents destroy the economy, on jobs numbers, Democrats double Republicans. Democratic average unemployment goes down 0.8% when a Democrat is president. Under Republicans, unemployment goes up 1.1 percentage points. We're talking about percentage points here, not percent. Down 0.8 percentage points under Democrats' unemployment. Unemployment up 1.1 percentage points under Republican presidents. Real GDP growth, okay? When you've got a Democratic president, 4.2% a year. When you've got a Republican president, 2.3% a year. Significant difference. And if you look at the stock market, which now we're getting a little bit away from jobs, but it is related, S&P 500 returns dating back to 1945, when you've got a Democratic president, about 11% a year, and when you have a Republican president, 6.5% a year. These are very long-term numbers at this point in time. Different types of Democrats, different types of Republicans. Is the country at war? Is the country not at war? Is there a broader global calamity or not? We look at a sampling, the longer the better, and the numbers are very clear, and it is a sad thing for Fox News. I almost start to wonder, whose side are they on? Are they on the side of the country and the workers, or are they simply on the side of MAGA and the Republican Party? It's getting pretty damn clear. Late last week, a completely obvious hoax broke, which led to many on the right to demand a mistrial in the conviction of failed former President Donald Trump. What was it that happened? What happened that caused this? Some random guy posted on the court's Facebook page that his cousin is on the jury and they've decided that they're going to convict Donald Trump. If it were true that someone's cousin on the jury leaked the verdict to them in advance, that would be a major, major problem. The only issue is that it was completely fabricated and made up. And so many right wingers fell for it. Patrick Bet-David fell for it and tweeted out, if you ever get jury duty, don't tell your cousin about the verdict the day before it's announced, especially on Facebook. Double dumb. It was just a joke. Mike Lee, the congressman, we should all have T-shirts printed. My cousin is a juror and says Trump is getting convicted. And thank you, folks, for all your hard work. It was a hoax. Mark Levin, considered a great legal scholar by Donald Trump, responds to a Fox News article about this by saying, surprise, surprise, crooked juror in Trump case. How many more? The reality, of course, is that none of this was true. We figured this out well before Sean Hannity went to air, but Sean Hannity still choosing to talk about it like it's a real story.
And earlier tonight, this is huge. Judge Mershon from the Trump trial sent a letter to lawyers on both sides in that case, letting them know that before the verdict was announced, a Facebook user, I believe the day before the verdict, left a comment on one of the state court system's posts writing, quote, my cousin is a juror and says Trump is getting convicted. Okay, was the fix-in from the beginning? Is this cause for a mistrial?
And of course, Donald Trump jumping all over the mistrial train as well. However, it's all bogus. Anybody can go on Facebook and post that. Anybody can do it. The post has since been deleted, but the individual who posted this, Michael Anderson, if you look at his, I believe now he's gone private on all of his Facebook stuff, but if you looked at it at the time, You see that he regularly just posts nonsense all over the internet. This is sometimes called S-posting, S-H-I-T posting. And he actually posted when people started going after him and saying, you've caused a mistrial. You're going to cause a mistrial. He said, take it easy. I'm a professional S-poster. In internet culture, S-posting or trash posting is the act of using an online forum or social media page to post content that is of aggressively, ironically, and trollishly poor quality. S-posts are generally intentionally designed to derail discussions or cause the biggest reaction with the least effort. It may even sometimes be orchestrated as part of a coordinated flame war to render a website unusable by regular visitors. It was just a hoax, and they all fell for it. And, you know, when I first saw the story, and maybe, you know, maybe there's something useful here for people in general, like how should we react when we see such a story? My immediate questions were, who is this guy? Was this actually posted before the verdict? Because you could also post something like this after the verdict. It was posted before the verdict, but that would be one question. Is it even true that this was posted before the verdict? Who is the individual in question? Do they really have a cousin on the jury? And is any of this even real or passing the sniff test? And if you clicked on the guy's Facebook profile, to any sort of normal, well-adjusted person who understands kind of how to read, you would realize something is weird about this. This doesn't really make any sense. It's not sounding like this is really a guy with a cousin on the jury. And of course, it was not. And Trump's out there demanding a mistrial, and Hannity's out there demanding a mistrial. And it is all complete and total nonsense. So buyer beware. I know that it's very exciting when you find something that you think is useful to you. If you've been saying this conviction is so unfair, we've got to find some way to get Trump out of this. And all of a sudden something pops up and you go, oh, there's the cause for a mistrial. Maybe before jumping all over social media and posting about it, and this includes if you're Trump talking about a mistrial, maybe wait to figure out whether it's a hoax and you've been had, as so many of these right wingers were, before demanding the mistrial. So certainly a lesson in internet trolling, to say the least. Let's take a very quick break. Make sure you're subscribed to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/The David Pakman Show. I have a very, very important announcement, significant announcement about the future of The David Pakman Show coming up later this week, sort of an existential announcement, for lack of a better term. I think some people will like it. Some people are definitely going to be upset, but we've got a big announcement coming up this week. Hope you'll subscribe to us on YouTube. We'll hear from a sponsor or two, and then the Monday show will continue. Donald Trump held a rally in absolutely blazing heat in Las Vegas, Nevada, just days after 50 heat-related hospitalizations at his rally in Phoenix, Arizona. Remember, the reason he did the Phoenix rally midday is he had to get up to Silicon Valley for a high-priced fundraiser later at night. Donald Trump choosing to hold a rally in Las Vegas, Nevada, where temperatures were well over 100, and it was a disaster. Before the rally even started and Trump turned on his voters, we'll get to that in a moment, we had reports of dozens of medical patients and multiple transports to local hospitals. 100 people became so overwhelmed by the heat that they had to go to these medical cooling tents that they had set up. And this part of the story barely even getting any corporate media attention. And it's all with Trump not mentioning the people from Phoenix, didn't go to the hospital to see them and thank them for the support. Nope, he just flew off on his private jet to Silicon Valley after the Phoenix rally and the exact same thing happening in Vegas. And you know what? Trump doesn't care about his voters. He even said it during this rally. Listen to this.
By the way, isn't that breeze nice? Do you feel the breeze? Because I don't want anybody going on me. We need every voter. I don't care about you. I just want your vote. I don't care. See, now the press will take that and they'll say he said a horrible thing.
Well, it's the truth. Trump really doesn't care about you or your family or your community or the Constitution if it's inconvenient or the rule of law if it's inconvenient. He cares about what is best for him. And I know that Trump is framing it as a joke, except Trump has no real sense of humor. So the degree to which he's ever joking is a question mark. But we know that this is true. He doesn't care about people who can't afford it, donating money to him as long as they do. He doesn't care about people dropping like flies in the heat as long as they make it there in order to let him inflate the size of the crowd. And this was one of the most disastrous rallies Trump has ever done, glitching numerous times, time and time again, and the crowd increasingly confused by it.
And no third, I'll tell you what.
And no third, I'll tell you what. What? What was he trying to say there?
And no third, I'll tell you what.
Oh, I think he was maybe going for third world country there. Is that maybe what he was going for there? Trump said that he's the guy who's really suffering from the heat.
We don't have enough time. And now, by the way, it's 110, but it doesn't feel it to me, right? So we'll stay out here for a little while. If anybody gets tired, you'll let me know. And if anybody goes down, if you start going down, we have people, they'll pick you up right away. They'll throw water. You know, they were so worried. Everybody was so worried yesterday about you. And they never mentioned me. I'm up here sweating like a dog. Secret Service said, we have to make sure everyone's safe. I said, what about me? Oh, we never thought of that.
Now, again, hey, guys, Trump's joking, but this is the truth. All this focus on the dozens of people that went down like flies because of the heat, possible heat stroke, hospitalized. But I'm up here sweating like a dog. And nobody's talking about me. It all needs to be about me.
I did everything right and they indicted me.
At least the indictment was all about Trump. Trump also coming up with the term Hispanican. Hispanican. Not Hispanic. Not Hispanic American. But Hispanican.
About war on the workers of America, especially African Americans and Hispanic Americans and African Americans.
I kind of like that. I do consider myself Hispanican, if I'm totally upfront, right? Because, as you know, I came here from Argentina, where they're speaking languages no one's ever heard of, according to Donald Trump. Trump did rant about batteries and shark attacks. And I dare you to make sense of what Trump is saying here.
And it must be because of MIT, my relationship to MIT. Very smart. He goes, I say, what would happen if the boat sank from its weight?
Right.
And you're in the boat and you have this tremendously powerful battery and the battery is now underwater.
I think this is an attack on electric cars, but I'm not totally sure.
And there's a shark that's approximately 10 yards over there. By the way, a lot of shark attacks lately. Do you notice that? A lot of shark.
Yeah.
I watched some guys justify.
It's because of Sleepy Joe.
Yeah, today. Well, they weren't really that angry. They bit off the young lady's leg because of the fact that they were not hungry, but they misunderstood who she was.
Yeah.
These people are crazy. He said there's no problem with sharks. They just didn't really understand. A young woman swimming now really got decimated and other people too. A lot of shark attacks. So I said,
yep. So anyway, RNC research is very quickly scrambling to doctor more videos of Joe Biden to draw attention away from this rally where, I mean, listen, maybe Trump was experiencing heat stroke during this rally. And that explains this. Trump ranting about electric vehicles. And at this point, the crowd is asleep. They're just, you are going to hear, you could hear a pin drop as Trump rants about electric vehicles.
And you have to get chargers. There are no chargers. The whole thing is, it's the kind of thing that if your five-year-old grandson were sitting up here and you gave him a quiz, he would say, don't bother with the electric. There's another thing. The truck is so heavy because batteries are very heavy. The truck weighs more than twice as much as a gasoline truck. So what happens, a diesel. So what happens is they have to fix every bridge all over the United States to handle the weight. Every bridge has to be
we kind of have to fix those bridges anyway.
Built because the weight is double and triple that of a gasoline or diesel tank truck. And you say to yourself, who are these people that are destroying our country? Why?
The crowd is silent. They're like, I'm in direct sunlight in 110 degrees. It is way too hot for Trump's rants about electric vehicles. Now, as you know, Trump and MAGA frame themselves as being for law and order. And here Donald Trump refers to the alleged and also convicted criminals from the January 6th riots as warriors and victims. That's not how I remember January 6th.
But those J6 warriors, they were warriors, but they were really more than anything else. They're victims of what happened. All they were doing is protesting a rigged election. That's what they were doing.
Right.
And then the police say, go in, go in, go.
So Trump once again defending the criminal rioters from January 6th while simultaneously saying he is the law and order president. Now, a lot of people just bailed on this. Here's really funny video. This is from Hal Sparks. And this is within 5 minutes of the speech starting. And people are just leaving. People with broken arms, people with walkers, people who, quite frankly, they really probably shouldn't have been out there in the first place in 110 degree heat. They're just leaving. Everybody's heading out. And you can hear Trump speaking in the background.
It's so much easier. The only one that can't read a teleprompter is Joe Biden.
Someone with a baby. I mean, what are you doing with a baby with no clothes in the 110 degree heat to listen to failed president, convicted felon Donald Trump? It's all disgusting. And Trump turned on his own followers during the rally. Now, if you thought all of this was bad, just wait to hear what Marjorie Taylor Greene tried to say when she got up to speak. A radical, repugnant, reactionary and very rancid, Marjorie Taylor Greene spoke at the Trump rally in Las Vegas, Nevada. As she was speaking, dozens of people were fainting due to the 100 plus degree heat to which they were exposed for hours as they waited for the real American Donald Trump to fly in on his private jet. Marjorie Taylor Greene complained, "If you think gas prices are high now, wait until you start driving an electric vehicle," which is a really weird thing to say, since if you drive an electric vehicle, you no longer need to buy gas.
"And you think gas prices are high now? Just wait until you're forced to drive an electric vehicle."
Right.
Exactly.
Right.
Yes.
Anyway. So, you know, if you get an electric vehicle, you can stop worrying about gas prices. Not 100%. A lot of the stuff you buy will still come on a truck that either uses gas or diesel. So just getting an electric vehicle doesn't make you not care at all about gas prices. But I will tell you, I drive an electric vehicle. I couldn't tell you what gas prices are in my neighborhood. Like, I assume around $3.50, but I really just don't know. And it is a great thing to be able to get away from being dependent on gasoline. And they talk about, oh, well, you know, the Saudis can manipulate and then the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. Get away from all of it. And of course, there's no plan to force anyone to drive an electric vehicle. But eventually new gas powered vehicles will be phased out because they kind of don't make any sense to drive around pumping toxic fumes just into the air. It's nuts. And I'm convinced that some number of years from now, we'll look back at this and be like, what the hell were we doing? This doesn't even make any sense. Now, let me just make a more general point, because what she's getting to here is inflation. Oh, gas prices are so high. It's so high. It's so high under Biden. Inflation has been consistently the lowest of all of the Western richer sort of countries in the United States. If you look at the U.S. and the countries we consider our cohorts or contemporaries, inflation has been lowest here since the pandemic high. And critically, Donald Trump has articulated no plan to deal with it. I actually tweeted about this. For the people voting Trump because of Biden's inflation, can you account for, number one, why U.S. inflation post-pandemic is lowest among Western rich countries? And two, what Trump's plan is to lower inflation? And three, how low you want it, since it's already at the economically desirable 3%. Some of the responses I've gotten to that tweet are absolutely bonkers. And we're going to look at some of them tomorrow, because I did try to engage with people. One other thing from Marjorie Taylor Greene's speech. She is now equating Trump to Jesus by saying, OK, Trump's now a convicted felon. Well, so was Jesus.
The Democrats and the fake news media want to constantly talk about, oh, President Trump is a convicted felon. Well, you want to know?
Why does she say constantly? Like, what? Why can't she say any word correctly?
Something. The man that I worship is also a convicted felon.
Yeah.
And he was murdered on a Roman cross.
All right. So now that is the latest way that they are likening Trump to Jesus Christ himself. And that is the final nail in the coffin of the case that we've been making, that this is a complete and total, and by the way, a very dangerous and depraved cult. We are going to take a super quick break. And then afterwards, we've heard from Trump. We've heard from Marjorie Taylor Greene. And then we're going to hear from some of the bloodthirsty rally goers. And those may be the most vile of any of them. So stay with me. We'll be back right after this. So we've heard from Donald Trump in Vegas. We heard from Marjorie Taylor Greene. We're now going to hear from some of the rally goers. And for anybody who might be confused and think, oh, even if Trump thinks that, oh, he's going to jail Biden, none of his followers want that. These are law and order people. Now, if January 6, 2021 didn't prove to you that these are very much not law and order people, this video clip will. Right Side Broadcasting, Real America's Voice, and other shows were out there interviewing folks before the Trump rally, and they found a crowd that says one of the first things that Trump should do if he becomes president is put Biden directly in jail.
What should he do on day one of this next administration?
I think we had a jail of Brandon.
Brandon. You got a jail Brandon.
Yeah, and I would say get Joe what he needs, get him in a nice facility, you know, a nice retirement village.
So basically, we're going to...
Yeah. Jail Joe Biden. Now, a logical follow-up, because listen, this is the great Brian Glenn. He's Marjorie Taylor Greene's boyfriend. He's doing interviews that he wants us to believe are serious interviews, as funny as that is. A sort of natural follow-up would be, got it. In this country, we jail people after they've been convicted. But what is the crime for which you would like to see Joe Biden convicted? It's such a simple question, but it's such a tough question for many of these people who would be completely unable to actually tell you what the crime is. And then we might have follow-up questions like, does due process matter? Does a trial matter? Is it relevant whether the person has actually done something wrong? And do we need an investigation? Little things like that, right? Just small little things like that. There was a woman interviewed. She was at the rally. Remember, 100 plus degree weather, dozens of people dropping like flies, some having to be hospitalized, no shade. And she says she supports Trump because it's what's best for the kids. Forget about a Trump presidency. Even going to a Trump rally in the desert with 100 degree heat isn't what's best for your kids. Never mind if Trump becomes president. But here she is.
They're trying to go ahead and make, you know, all the LGBTQ stuff normal. I don't like that. They try to push it into the schools. I really don't like that. And us as parents, we want what's best for our kids. And we know voting for Trump will be a good start.
Yeah. Something makes me think she's not that concerned with her kids if she has them with no shade in 100 plus degree weather. Now, let me ask you another question. We know about the heat related illness. You think everybody there puts sunscreen on? I mean, serious question. Do you think that after this rally, you have folks turning up by the dozens who were there at ERs with serious sunburns? Or like, are they even smart enough to realize you need sunscreen to be out for 8 hours with nothing but fetid sani cans and porta potties rather than shade waiting for Trump to fly in on his private jet? Do they even know to put sunscreen on? Now, one of the other things I want to mention here is at the beginning, she said something about LGBT. I want to play that again.
Trying to go ahead and make, you know, all the LGBTQ stuff normal. I don't like that. They try to push it into the schools.
They're trying to push the LGBT stuff into the schools. If I were interviewing her and I was trying to do a serious interview, which Brian Glenn is not trying to do, he just nods along, right? Like a ventriloquist doll. Oh, yeah, yeah. I would say, ah, beautiful. Tell me, what is the LGBT stuff and how are they trying to push it in schools? Because what you would often get to is, well, I heard that in fourth grade, they read a book where a character has two moms. And then you would be there waiting. It would be a pregnant pause. waiting for the payoff. Okay, and what is it that they've done that's so terrible? And that would be it. Or they might not even have that. That would be if these were being handled as real interviews, which they very much are not. And then they did find one smart guy at the Trump rally who said, it's just too hot. I'm going to get the hell out of here.
Sir, let me know. Tell our audience what your name is and how you're doing today.
I'm Chris. I'm from the PAA podcast. I'm very, very hot. I was planning on staying out here for 8 hours, and I don't think I'm going to do it. I'm live streaming, but I'm going to go around and say hi to people and then just boogie, I think. It's nasty out here.
Yep, exactly. Nobody should be there. This is a rally that the rally should have been aborted at conception, quite frankly. At the moment someone conceived, hey, what about a rally in Vegas in June, outdoors? Thoughts? Middle of the day. At that point, they should have aborted the idea. That's my view on it. And very, very dangerous to your health to go to these rallies. All right. Dr. Phil McGraw did a record-setting suck-up interview with convicted felon Donald Trump. I do not believe it is even conceivably possible to do a more sycophantic, brown-nosing, down-on-your-knees cult interview than what Dr. Phil did to Donald Trump. And I want to remind you before we watch the clips from the interview with Dr. Phil, Dr. Phil was on this show recently, and he tried to deny to me that he's a political actor, that he's a right winger. He's like, no. I look at things from a psychosocial view. He tried to deny. And listen, I knew, right? And we exposed him. I knew this guy was just covering and was a right wing actor. But remember what he told me about politics.
You know, I'm very interested to speak to you today because in preparation for our interview, I've been watching some of the Fox News appearances, looking at the book, etc. I never really saw you as a guy who delved into political issues per se. You seem more willing, interested, and I must say, maybe more conservative than I thought you were. Is that a fair assessment?
Not at all.
Okay.
Because I am so not political, you can't even believe it.
Wow.
And I'll tell you why. I know nothing about politics. And,
yeah.
And I know why you say that.
He knows nothing about politics. Well, that really came out during the Trump interview we're going to look at in a moment.
It sounds like it.
Right.
I talk about these things as cultural issues in from a psychological, psychosocial standpoint, how they affect families and people. And they do overlap with some of the things that politicians talk about, but they talk about it from a political standpoint, funding standpoint, how they can get this bill or that bill through. Couldn't care less. But I am interested in those issues in terms of how they impact families in their day-to-day pursuit of life and peace and being able to raise their family in a healthy environment. So there's a lot of overlap, but I don't talk about it from a political standpoint because I frankly don't know enough about the politics of it all.
All right. He doesn't do politics because he doesn't know anything about politics and it's not partisan. Enter Donald Trump for an interview with Dr. Phil. And he starts by praying at the altar of Trump and telling Trump how incredibly thick his skin is. Like, we're starting off with something that is it would make North Korean news anchors blush.
Now, I know you got a thick skin. You're not one of those people that's afflicted with the need to be loved by strangers. I get that.
I think that's true.
My question is not how do you do it? My question is why do you do it? Mm. Why do you, 'cause let's face it. I mean, you're a billionaire. You got a great family. You're a very dedicated father. People may not see this in you a lot.
None of these things are true.
Because you keep that kind of private. But my question to you is, why do you subject yourself to this?
Dr. Phil claims to be a foremost expert on human psychology, psychosocial factors, and he thinks that Trump, the neediest and most narcissistic man I think maybe I've ever even conceived of, doesn't need the love of strangers. And how could Dr. Phil get it so wrong? Now, the other really weird thing about this entire interview was the way that it was cut makes no sense whatsoever unless, and this is like a big unless, Trump was saying such demented things that they said, we have to cut this stuff. Here is 8 seconds. And look at the way that they cut this up.
You'd be the first one to do it. I know you. You'd say, what? Let's get rid of these. You know the money they save and the danger they save?
And look.
I mean, what? How do you get a cut like that if you aren't saying we need to micromanage this down to the syllable, down to the syllable? And maybe what they've done is they've realized we can't get him to deliver a normal interview. So we're just going to have to fix it in post-production. I don't know what's going on, but the cutting is absurd. Trump talking about the size of Congressman Adam Schiff's head and Dr. Phil trying not to laugh. And again, remember, Dr. Phil doesn't do politics.
These are not stupid people. I call him Watermelon Head. He's got the thinnest neck I've ever seen, how it holds up that head. He's got a neck that's about a size 6. Very unattractive guy, both inside and outside. And people say, oh, that's such a terrible thing to say. That's okay. Very unattractive guy. Here's the thing. These are bad people.
There you go. And Dr. Phil just struggling not to smile there. Trump did mention that he's mad at Jews during the interview because we're not supporting him because Jews are very left wing.
So why are people so energized against President Donald J. Trump?
Well, I think it's to a certain extent, it's habit, not necessarily against me. I think Democrats vote out of habit. Mm. I'll give you an example. I was the best president for Israel ever. Golan ever. Heights, all of the things I did for Israel. And yet I get less than 50% of the votes. It's shocking to me. And Biden's a disaster. And Obama was a disaster for Israel with the Iran nuclear deal that he approved, all the, you know, which was basically a path toward nuclear weapons. And I say, why? And I say, it's habit. They're used to voting for Democrats. Black people are used to voting for Democrats, but they're coming off it. They're smart. They're seeing what's happened. They're seeing.
Yeah. Jewish folks will not be voting for Donald Trump in any serious way this November, that I can assure you. And then finally, non-political Dr. Phil puts some, quote, statistics up on the screen about how much better things were under Donald Trump. You have to see this.
Everybody calls it inflation, but affordability. When we talk about gasoline, under your administration, average $2.57 a gallon. Under Biden, $3.61, 40% more. Under your administration, homes, average $320,000. Under the Biden administration, 31% more, $420,000.
So let's pause it right there. Do people in the audience realize what's very stupid about these numbers in the sense of Dr. Phil using these to justify how great Trump was? You know, first of all, with gasoline, average $2.57, average in this case, we don't even know how that was calculated. I've not seen that number. When Trump left office, gas was $2.87. The reality is that once you back out just underlying inflation and the fact that things get more expensive, it would sort of be if like I came here and I said, hey, you know what? Trump was terrible on gas prices because they were cheaper under Obama. And then you could come up and go, David, Obama was terrible on gas prices. They were cheaper under George W. Bush. And then I come back and go, no. They were even cheaper under Bill Clinton. Once you back out the fact that we have a background level of inflation, gasoline being 361 now versus Trump's 257 or more accurately 287, it's not really the big gotcha that you think it is. The other one that's really funny is homes. They point out home prices are way up under Biden. Now, I'm not going to deny that when homes get more expensive, they become more difficult for people to afford. But homes also are one of the biggest indicators of how the economy is doing. And homes are the biggest equity stake that most Americans have. The biggest place where Americans have money is in their home. And so you can just say, hey, look at this under Biden. Americans have seen their homes appreciate 31%. That is an insane increase to their net worth. What great news. The point here is it's all about balance. And the fact that Dr. Phil is just saying, oh, home prices being up is bad. Home prices being up has been one of the greatest drivers of increased net worth for people. If you don't own a home, obviously you have a different position. But the whole point here is this is one of the most laughable affordability crisis sort of sets of statistics. Now, let's listen to a little more.
Under your administration, interest rates 3.8 average. Under the Biden administration, 39% more at 5.3%.
Now, let's talk about that one. The president doesn't set interest rates. The reason interest rates were so low under Trump is because of the COVID economic disaster and the Fed saying things are bad, so we keep rates low. Low rates are a reaction to economic problems. We now have higher rates, which soon may be starting to come down. Part of the reason that rates have gone up is because you don't want an overheated economy. Therefore, the Fed says to slow things down a little bit. Things are so good, we can start raising rates. Maybe Dr. Phil is right. He doesn't know anything, but he's certainly pretending to here. So this is to say this would make North Korean and Russian state TV anchors blush is really an understatement. And the whole concept of I'm just Dr. Phil, I'm not political, I don't know anything about politics. And then he couldn't be sucking up more aggressively to Donald Trump. It's sad to see, but I can't say it's super surprising. All right. As some of you I know saw, I was on the Piers Morgan program last week. I was on quite a panel, and the panel was, I guess, generically about Trump and Biden. You know how these things are, or maybe you don't, actually. The way these things often work is they contact you very last second. They tell you, here's the people you'll probably be on the panel with, and then it changes. The topics are given to you an hour before. So needless to say, I ended up on a panel with MAGA guy Benny Johnson, and then attorney Alan Dershowitz, and then Democratic commentator Nomiki Konst, who we've known for a long time, and then, of course, Piers Morgan hosting it. And, you know, some of you wrote to me and had a very interesting reaction, which was, you know, David, some of the things you said on that show are different from the things you sometimes say on your show. And that's absolutely right. And let's talk through it. I'm going to play some relevant clips here, and I'll kind of give you my sense of what my preparation is like and how it ended up kind of going this way. So let's listen to the first clip.
I still don't know what he was convicted of. Was he convicted of intent to cheat on his taxes 2 years later, although he didn't take it as a deduction? Was he convicted of defrauding voters who obviously knew that he was a sexual scoundrel? Was he convicted of seeking to make an illegal campaign contribution, although the contribution didn't have to be listed until after the election? I have never seen a case where even after the verdict came down, we don't know what he was convicted of.
David Pakman, I saw you smirking quite a lot during what Alan was saying. But Alan, as he said, he's not a Trump supporter, and he is one of the most eminent lawyers in America. Does it not concern you that the glee that currently is spewing out from every Democrat poll might be tempered by a pretty hard reality shock if it plays out the way Alan suggests?
I think Trump's going to lose either way. And why do I think that? Because Republicans have lost everything since Trump won in 2016. 2018 was a disaster. Trump lost 2020. The red wave of 2022 led to Democrats getting a bigger majority in the Senate. The 2023 special off-year elections, every abortion-related referendum, it's been a disaster. So Trump's going to lose regardless. I don't know how much of an impact this verdict is going to have, but we know what he was found guilty of. You can say, well, I don't know that they should have brought the case. There is prosecutorial discretion. Hopefully we'll talk about that with regard to Hunter Biden as well. You can say the judge should have recused himself because he made a $35 donation to Act Blue. But to succeed on appeal, you have to point to something the judge actually did that's problematic. And the lawyers I've spoken to can't really point to anything. So I think Alan makes some good points. I just don't see this as the crazy controversy that some are making it out to be.
Some of you correctly identified, you know, David, on your show, you don't say Trump's going to lose. In fact, you often make the case you don't know who's going to win. It's going to be super close. It'll come down to probably 500,000 votes in 3 to 5 states. Why do you say something different on that show? My approach with these shows is you get a very limited amount of time to talk, and you need to make some clear and definitive point, including one that you can sort of plan for ahead of time.
And the two points I wanted to make here in order to sort of come off strongest was none of this stuff is going to really matter. And the reason that people like Benny Johnson and others are freaking out is because they've lost everything for almost a decade. In order to make that point, you sort of have to also say, and they know they're going to lose this time around as well. Call it crazy. This is sort of the world of kind of low rent panels of this kind. I don't know. You know, you got me. I think it'll be close. And on the show, I said, I think Trump's going to lose because you kind of try to come up with something to say that will push back against the talking points that these people use. The other thing that I said there is about the judge. And we were told there's going to be a discussion about whether the judge misconduct. So I kind of go in knowing, listen, you can say whatever you want about the judge. You can say the judge shouldn't have been the judge to begin with. But to get this thing overturned on appeal, you really have to point to some decision, this decision the judge made that was inappropriate. And the fact that he donated $35 to Act Blue is just not going to cut it. So my approach is let me have one or two main things to say with each topic that they give us. Here again was Biden dementia, which they brought up.
Joe Biden is suffering some form of dementia. That was the clear conclusion from those who've been around him. And we see enough in public to suggest that may be the case. How comfortable are you that he is going to be fighting this election and potentially being president for four more years?
Well, worst case scenario, they both are struggling cognitively, in which case I'd much rather the people around Biden making decisions than the sycophants Trump would put around him, which, with no offense at all, are sort of versions of Benny Johnson, by the way. And the audience, I'm sure we could have a beer together, Benny, and have a great time, but it's not like I necessarily want the government run by people like you. Worst case scenario, they're both struggling. You know, at this point, I've interviewed four medical and mental health professionals, two from mental health, two from the neurology side. So far, they've all told me Joe Biden is experiencing age-related aging that you would expect for someone of his age. Trump seems to be seriously cognitively struggling where he doesn't realize he's saying things that don't make sense. He doesn't realize that he's getting names completely wrong, stories that don't make sense, doesn't know who he ran against, doesn't know who he's running against, doesn't know who he ran against in 2016 or who's president right now. I mean, a level of confusion. And again, I'm neither a neurologist nor a mental health expert. This is what the mental health experts have told me. Now, I will say, I read the article. Some of the sourcing is people that MAGA Mike Johnson talked to. That's not super compelling to me. However, I do think Annie Linsky is a trustworthy reporter. I am not pretending this story isn't out there, and I cover it on my show today. I think it's a serious story.
Now, ultimately, we found out it was not a serious story, but at least at the time, my thought was, okay, what are my three points here? I'm going to make the point that if we've got two candidates with dementia, Biden's doing a pretty damn good job, and the people around him are the people I want in power. Number two, every expert I've spoken to says the problem here is Trump. And then number three, I'm not ignoring this story, although I'm sort of suspicious about some of the sourcing. So again, my strategy to give you a peek behind the curtain is I go in and I'm kind of like, what are the two or three things that I want to say here? I don't know if I want to look at there were a couple other clips. There was like a Bill Clinton thing, which I'll play, which, again, it's just like what Bill Clinton did with Paula Jones wasn't a crime. And so I stuck with that.
You've got Bill Clinton, who, while he was president, had sex with an intern in the Oval Office. You've got Bill Clinton, who paid off Paula Jones $850,000 for settling a sexual harassment case while he was president. It didn't happen while he was president, but he paid her off while he was. None of that led to a criminal prosecution. And I would think many Americans, if they're just out of the toxic tribal loop, would go, well, surely even the Paula Jones one sounds a lot worse than a consensual fling with Stormy Daniels 20 years ago.
The flaw is that there was nothing illegal about Bill Clinton settling that lawsuit, and they were not campaign contributions disguised in this way, which was determined to be criminal. I think Trump will make himself a martyr either way. He's a victim of the system of elections being rigged. He's a victim of the justice system being rigged. He's a victim of the media rigging his microphone and the temperature in the debates. He's always going to be a victim of everything. They've lost everything since 2016, Piers. Of course he's going to be the victim, because he can't just admit, for the last 8 years, I've destroyed this political party. We've lost everything since I became president.
Let him lose legitimately.
Well, that's what I was about to say, actually.
All right. So it was a very interesting experience. You know, you have such limited time. You really need to know exactly what it is you plan to say. I think it went well enough, and I don't know if they'll have me back, but it was certainly interesting. I went to a drag show over the weekend, or sort of stumbled upon one. And what I saw there stunned me. Now, bear with me for a moment so I can lay this out. Last week, I interviewed MAGA Republican candidate Royce White, who's running against Democratic Minnesota Senator Amy Klobuchar. And among non sequiturs and lies and misdirection, at one point Royce brought up, apropos of nothing, so-called drag strip shows, looking to equate a drag show with what happens at strip clubs. As a reminder, here's how that went.
Why they're bringing their children to drag stripper shows.
Let me ask about a couple
of
things.
Do you think that's okay? Do you think it's okay to sexualize children at drag stripper shows?
I don't think the children are being sexualized if they go to a drag show. No, I just don't think that that's the sexualization.
You don't
of
think
children.
That you don't think children are being. Would it be okay for me as a grown adult male to take underage kids to a regular strip club?
I don't think they're allowed. No.
Why aren't they allowed? Is it because of the alcohol or because of the sexualization?
I don't know the laws around strip clubs. I couldn't tell you.
Oh,
but Royce,
okay.
If
maybe
I
you should learn them, though, because you're talking.
All right. So many of you wrote to me and you said, you know, David, Royce is being super dishonest. A drag show and a strip club really have nothing in common. Well, I stumbled upon a drag show over the weekend and I watched a few minutes. And I have to tell you, this might stun you. None of what Republicans have been saying about drag shows was actually true. The drag show had nothing sexual about it. There were some kids in the audience. There was, I hope I'm using the right term here, there was a drag queen. I hope it's not a derogatory term. There was a drag queen doing balloon animals. Every kid was there with a parent. No one recruited and secretly forced any children to the drag show against their parents' wishes. And I hope this isn't offensive either. The drag show had way more in common with a clown act for kids than it did with a strip club. There was no nudity. There was no sexual content. It was biological men dressed in exaggerated makeup and women's clothing, and the makeup and the wigs and the whole thing. It has everything in common with a completely benign and typical performance for kids. And it had nothing in common with strippers nor a strip club. Now, this may not come as a surprise to many in my audience, but once again, Republicans have set up this enemy, drag shows, and they try to equate them to adult strip clubs, and there is simply no reasonable analogy here. So just by chance, I got a chance to do a little bit of investigation into some of those claims that Royce made, and they fall pretty flat. I also want to address the Royce White interview a little more broadly. Instead of a voicemail today, I have an email to put up on the screen for you. Melissa wrote to me about last week's interview with Royce White. And Melissa wrote, "Latest interview made me a paid subscriber. The interview with Mr. I Only Eat at Strip Club Restaurants made me finally stop and take the time to become a member. I'd been putting it off. I loved everything about you and your content, and this interview was icing on the cake. It felt great seeing you do your thing, and I got the best laugh. You are keeping me sane through this crazy time. Thank you for that. Sincerely, Melissa. P.S. I started watching you the day Howard Stern told us to check you out." That is absolutely delightful, Melissa.
Oh, the bonus show where you want to make money. Everybody else that makes money to fund themselves is bad.
I heard from about 10 or 12 people who said, "David, I already knew about your content, but that Royce White interview was just something else, and I became a member right away." Massive dumps of memberships as a result. Some people did not like the interview, and there were people who wrote in and said, "David, you just shouldn't waste your time with people like that." You know, one of the realities we have to contend with right now is that I understand there's lots of Republicans looking to be reelected who are more normal than Royce White. But if you look at the kind of upstart challengers on the Republican side that are trying to get elected, particularly ones that are in any way in cahoots with Trump, a lot of them are out of their minds. So it's a tougher thing than you might imagine to find the so-called normal Republicans. All right, we've got a great bonus show for you today. Texas is asking people, avoid using your cars. What? Yes. Conspiracy theorist Alex Jones has agreed to liquidate assets to pay Sandy Hook families. And the Trump Supreme Court decision on immunity is imminent. Where might that go? All of those stories and more on today's bonus show. Don't miss it. Make sure you're signed up at joinpacman.com. And we'll be back tomorrow with a new show as well.
Hey there, folks. Glad you could join me for all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call jazz.
Tired of the fluffy stuff? At WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one-song award.
My fellow Americans, I would just like to say now, as an expert on the subject, that WRCT Pittsburgh does not blow. Thank you.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet. Because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
Depose from the faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
For those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
Nuclear Holocaust. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM.
CT Pittsburgh, meaty and full of flavor since 1949.
WRCT, the in sound from way out.
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing out there in Techno Land? RCT Techno DJs in the house. Oh yeah, bringing you the only fat beats in Pittsburgh. Right here on WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM.
Welcome, everybody. Hope you had a good weekend. One of the nice things we got going into the weekend was another very strong jobs report. And when you see job creation exceed expectations, and when you see a sustained low unemployment rate, if you're rooting for the country, if you're rooting for workers, if you're rooting for small businesses and the people, you would be happy about such news. You would say, oh, I'm on the side of my country and the people who work here. And therefore, when job creation is strong, when unemployment is low, it's something to be happy about. I know this would be sort of like a weird introduction to a story if there were not a group of people actively rooting for the country's demise, or when they can no longer do that because it's so obvious the economy looks pretty good, they start taking credit for it despite the fact that they are not in power. And this is much of what we see from the modern Republican Party, and particularly from the MAGA right.
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
After having proceeded with the consultations as provided in Article 12 of our Constitution, I decided to give back to you the choice for the future of our Parliament with a vote. And so I am dissolving tonight our National Assembly.
President Emmanuel Macron dissolves the French Parliament, calls for snap elections following major gains by the far right in France and across Europe. We'll get the latest. Then, with nearly 85,000 people wounded in Gaza, its healthcare system is barely functioning after coming under direct attack by Israel. We'll speak with an emergency medical doctor who just left Gaza. And we'll be joined by Jewish-American Army Major Harrison Mann. He's the first military and intelligence officer to publicly resign over the Biden administration's support for Israel's war on Gaza.
I started my resignation in November because even then, in the first weeks of the war, it was really clear that the Israelis were prepared to inflict massive numbers of civilian casualties, that their conduct of the war, including the killing of civilians, was going to provoke a violent response.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Hamas has accepted a United Nations Security Council resolution calling for a ceasefire in the Gaza Strip. The U.S.-supported resolution passed Monday on a vote of 14-0 after Russia abstained. Its passage came after the Biden administration vetoed three previous resolutions calling for a ceasefire. Palestinian ambassador to the United Nations, Riyad Mansour, called the resolution a step in the right direction and demanded a permanent ceasefire.
Our position has been always to have an immediate ceasefire to stop the killing of our people. So this resolution is a step in that direction. The proof is in the details, and we want to see that this resolution to be implemented beginning with the ceasefire, and that this ceasefire to be permanent. We do not want to see the continuation of the fighting.
In a statement, Hamas said it would accept the ceasefire resolution and was ready to work with mediators to engage in indirect negotiations with Israel. Top U.S. officials have said Israel would accept the plan, contradicting statements by Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Meanwhile, there's been no let-up in Israel's assault. Following the resolution's passage, Israeli attacks have killed at least 11 people in northern and central Gaza. This all comes as world leaders and top aid officials are gathered in Jordan for an emergency humanitarian summit on Gaza. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken and Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas are attending the summit. Israel was reportedly not invited. In the occupied West Bank, Israeli forces raided the Al-Fara refugee camp Monday, killing at least three people, including a 15-year-old Palestinian teenager named Mahmoud al-Nabrisi. This is a resident of the Al-Fara camp.
set around by him.
They raided the house and damaged everything, and the house and the ceiling, everything. They ruined the washer and refrigerator, the bathroom, not leaving anything in it. They are terrorists and do not care for anyone.
Israeli forces have also arrested multiple children in the occupied West Bank and East Jerusalem in recent days. Since October 7th, Israel's killed over 530 Palestinians in the West Bank and arrested over 9,000. Here in the U.S., a federal court heard arguments Monday in an appeal to a lawsuit accusing top Biden administration officials of complicity in genocide. The case at the Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals was brought by Palestinians and human rights groups, including Defense for Children International Palestine. The suit seeks